Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Polinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
Brian Levinka.
Daniel Williams.
And Summer Iman.
And I'm Glenn Holt. Tonight on Queer Voices, Ray Hill will join us shortly for a discussion of, well, stuff. Ray will lead a discussion of what's going on in the community lately. In news wrap, hundreds of gay and lesbian couples began marrying in New York State at the stroke of midnight on July 24th. The California Supreme Court has scheduled oral arguments for September 6th to decide if sponsors of Proposition 8 have legal standing in the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals to challenge a lower court ruling. And it took 17 years, but the UN Economic and Social Council has restored the consultative status of ILGA, the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans, and Intersex Association. After news wrap, Harris County Democratic Party presents a celebration of diversity to honor LGBT trailblazers. It's a brunch coming up this Saturday morning in downtown Houston. Robert Shipman and Brad Pritchett will join us with the details. This Friday, a rally will be held to respond to Rick Perry's use of a hate group to sponsor his prayer event. The LGBT Texans Against Hate Rally will take place in downtown Houston at Tranquility Park at 7 p.m. and will feature various community groups and people traveling in from around the state. State Representative Garnett Coleman will be the keynote speaker. Noel Freeman will join us at 10 o'clock with more details about that. And an interfaith prayer service will be held this coming Saturday at 2 p.m. at First Unitarian Universalist Church of Houston. Associate Pastor Reverend Adam Robinson joins us to talk about how progressive people of faith are responding to Governor Perry's Day of Prayer and Fasting, the response, and how the planned gathering of Jewish, Buddhist, Muslim, Unitarian, Christian, pagan, agnostic, and atheist people stands in contrast to the governor's non-inclusive event. In the feature segments from This Way Out, a report on a video message released this week by United Nations Human Rights High Commissioner Navi Pillay. In it, Pillay traces the origins of the LGBT rights debate at the UN and what's planned for the future. And in a follow-up to a report last week about official government oppression by the state of Ghana of LGBT people in that country. Jack.
Well, as you can tell, we have a lot of items to talk about the governor's event this weekend, and usually we don't talk that much about Governor Perry, but it certainly brought a lot of stuff that we could, things that are happening around the event, progressive things to this community, and especially as he is probably considering running for president and telling everybody what a great job he's done in Texas. You here on KPFT certainly know the reality of what's happened here in Texas with all the budget cuts and how much it affects people who don't have an opportunity to be able to just open up their wallet and pay for health care or pay for this or that, or job does not necessarily give them good health care, among the other things, including HIV medication for those people who cannot afford the somewhat like $1,500 a month for the medication. That's really important what's going on here, and I'm sure other shows are carrying it here on KPFT. Also continuing this week is Q-Fest.
Tonight is the closing.
Tonight is the closing.
Yes.
Okay, well.
it was from Thursday until tonight.
And, you know, it's unfortunate because they had some really good films there, and I know, you know, a lot of us are busy doing other things at times, but it's great that we have this event here, and hopefully it will continue on. I hope it was a success.
I caught one on Saturday. It was called We Were Here. And it was a documentary in San Francisco at the very beginning of the AIDS crisis in, like, the early 80s when people were just falling down and they had no idea what it was
right.
about. And it profiled the people that were there. And it was It was kind of gut-wrenching.
Yeah, and there was one about the making of Boys in the Band, and I wanted to see that. I just couldn't able to fit it in. But I suppose some of these may be available at some other outlet, but of course it's always great to be able to see a film in an audience of our people.
Yes, and they had great turnout.
And the other event that happened this past week was the remembrance. You were there, Brian. And
yes,
so
the,
was
the Montrose Memorial.
And so was Daniel.
We were all there.
We were all
Queer
there.
Queer Voices was in the audience.
Yeah, well, I had it was there. I was the went to the screening of a new movie about the Joe Campos-Torres murder. Out at HCC, and I immediately came, after seeing it, came directly to the memorial.
And Jennifer, tell me a little bit about that.
It
happened in 1975.
Yes, it was almost in the form of like a documentary with some recreations, but it covered the actions and the inactions with the insight of how it turned out, the lies that were perpetrated, the actual location where the murder took place, and then describing and exhibiting what really happened.
I really wanted to go to that, and of course Ray Hill knows a lot about that because he lived here in that time. He was dealing with the police department at that time. It was basically a person who was murdered by
the police department.
Police department, and they basically blamed him for embarrassing the police department. And that was a cover story of the Rolling Stone back then. So
exactly.
It really hit the national media by talking.
And it had it shook the police department. It was earth-shaking in many areas. It brought a spotlight on to the Houston Police Department that showed its inadequacies as far as diversity that didn't exist, and the existence of a societal infrastructure of, you know, bullying, if you will.
And Pius was one of the people who was honored at the Remembrance Garden dedication. It was interesting. They had about 36 or so individuals in Houston who had been the victims of violence. And you could almost trace the progression of the LGBT community's relationship with the police department by looking at these different murders, from the Paez case, which was actually committed by the police, to the Broussard case, which I'm sure Ray will be speaking about in the next segment, where there was a real struggle to even get the police to prosecute the case, to the murder of Myra Akal just a few years ago, or I guess last year.
Last year,
where the initial reporting by the police department was incredibly disrespectful to the transgender community. And then at the same time, to have all of these people being remembered, and the people who got up to speak were our elected officials, our straight elected officials. It was an incredible service. If you weren't able to attend, you really missed something. And I would encourage you to go visit the Remembrance Garden. It's on the corner of, I believe it's California and
Grant.
California and Grant. That's the 1,000 block of California. Another thing to follow up with that, I'm on the police advisory committee, and that was, I had a lot of input in what was going on and then questioning. One of the things that they're trying to institute within the police department is when they bring the body in, the ME looks at the body, not mm-hmm. what it's wearing. The first thing they do is take all the clothes off. And so there needs to be, they're trying to get a sensitivity, because when they put the ME's report out, they'll say whether it's a male or female without regard to them being a trans person.
Right, but what the press picks up is not the ME report, but the press picks up is the Office of Public Communication press release that goes out. And usually that's the origin of the issue.
Well, there's two ways there's two areas. You're absolutely right on that, because that's where the press go. But the press release may come from the ME's office.
Right, right.
That it's a chain of custody of the individual without any sensitivity to who they are.
Exactly.
In their presentation.
And you're listening to Queer Voices.
on the moon, there is dust in space. There is dust on the stars, dust in a clouded place. There is dust in the road, there is dust on the cars. Just climbing up each blade of grass, filling up the yard. Nothing sticks to you. Now you're moving too fast to touch. You make me feel so still. Dust on the gate, there is dust on the porch. There is dust coming in through the cracks in the door. There is dust on the carpet, now there's dust on the rugs. Moving up each picture frame to every picture of us. I used to feel the world moving underneath my feet. Every chance I seemed to get was a vehicle for me. Then you had to hit the jackpot of my biggest dreams. And now I see you at the cashier and I'm turning green. You're moving too fast to touch. You make me feel so still, like I'm collecting dust. We're all smiles and compliments underneath bread and beer. Candy shells, how sugar shine. Angry bitter wine, twisting, turning. Dust in my scars, dust in my eyes, dust in my heart, dust in my head, dust in my ears, dust in my skin, dust in my nose, dust in my teeth, dust in my soul.
This is Queer Voices.
Usually on the first Monday of every month, we have David Elliott, but sometimes he likes to go on vacation or goes on a trip, so he is unavailable tonight. So we will have him
on. Isn't it a kid that was dancing, or is that somebody else, Elliott?
David Elliott used to work for the Austin American Chronicle.
Oh, okay, okay.
He used to work for the Texas Triangle.
Triangle, right, right. He's a Texas journalist.
Right, and then he went to Washington, and he worked for a number
of... But then Billy Elliott was the kid that danced.
The kid that danced, right, which became a musical. And I wish I didn't get to see that, but the movie was...
I can just hear those toes tapping.
The wonderful theme about Billy Elliott was his best friend, his young best friend. But anyway, Ray is here tonight, Ray Hill. We occasionally have a conversation with Ray because of his long history in the community and the continuing work that Ray does within the community. When we don't rehearse this, and I don't tell Ray what he can say and what he can't say, because more than likely he will say it anyway.
That's probably true.
So what is going on in your life these days?
Well, I am doing a radio show on the internet. It's called Ray on the Radio, and radio is spelled R-A-Y-D-I-O. And it's a non-commercial offering through Houston Media Source. We're trying to build a internet presence at Houston Media Source for the purpose of teaching people in radio what we've been doing in television for a long time. Houston Media Source is a wonderful Houston resource. It's paid for through cable fees, and you can go there, and they will teach you how to use cameras and what to do about lighting and how to do a storyboard and put something together so that you can learn how to use. It's kind of the slogan of indie media. Don't hate the media, be the media.
Well, you and I come from a long time working in radio.
Sure.
And I think you and I both appreciate the art of radio.
Sure.
That, I mean, Garrison Keillor is a perfect example of the art of radio.
Sure.
A little bit old-fashioned, but incredible. Or This American Life that's heard here on this station.
Sure.
Which tells...
Well, you're talking about Two of the Wizards.
Yes.
You're talking about... and actually, I know both of those people. I've done radio with those people, and they are the wizards. And you have to go back to the early radio comedians to find people that are Bob and Ray and all of those wonderful old people that knew how to use the medium. And the medium is very changed.
Absolutely.
Radio is Marshall McLuhan's theory,
it's
the most intimate form of media.
It's his 100th anniversary of the birth. I was listening to some interviews.
Of Marshall.
Yeah, Marshall, talking about him on the CBC. And, you know, it's also the 60th anniversary of the Selectic typewriter.
Yeah.
And the 30th anniversary of MTV.
Isn't that amazing? 60th anniversary of the Selectic typewriter. I went to a Marshall McLuhan seminar in the Bahamas one time. And went out to study from the master himself. And while I was back there getting coffee one morning, this frumpy older woman in a flour sack dress came back and said, "Well, what do you think of the seminar?" And she said, "Do you get the impression that if you read the book, you really don't need to be here?" And I said, "As a matter of fact, I have read the book not once but several times." She said, "Do you know we're 100 paces from the most beautiful beaches in the world?" And I spent the next 3 days running barefoot through the sand with Margaret Mead. One of the greatest educational experiences of my life.
Okay. Yes.
I love it.
So what is going
only
on?
Only on this radio do we
what
hear these stories
on,
from Ray.
What is going on, Ray, in the community? What are you up to these days besides your
Well, of course, I've been spending, I went up to lecture at Sam Houston today, and that was about criminal justice stuff, but I always do that as an openly gay person and immediately bond with the gay folks in the Sam Houston classroom. And a young woman and I bonded, but the best-looking guy in the room, of course, big jock type, he turned out to be gay, too, and he's going to be a cop. So he's my kind of a gay person because he's breaking into a career where it's not going to be easy for him. And so we exchanged notes and pleasantries and all of that, and I talked a lot about how prisons don't work and how expensive they are and that sort of thing. But then, of course, I've been talking about prisons a lot because I'm working very hard to secure parole release for John Bice. John Bice is in prison for killing Paul Brassard, and I am the person who tracked the Woodlands 10 down, identified them, and saw to it that they were aggressively prosecuted. Then I got to know them all, and I've helped all of them get out. There is only one remaining, and that has not been out. Chance has been out and is back, but John has never been out. He's now been locked up 20 years.
And there's a lot of community opposition to that.
There's a good bit of community opposition to that. I try not to let any of that go unanswered.
Mm-hmm.
So when I see it, I jump on it. The memorial thing for Aaron Sherhart the other day was going to be turned into an anti-John Bice parole rally.
Right.
But I was able to get to Rodney. Well, I had someone get to Rodney earlier, and I was able to get to Senator Gallegos earlier, and my best help came from Reverend Sinclair. I mean, he got up there and talked about the importance of praying for both the victim and the culprit, which set the tone. And so when Andy Kahn got up and barked at the just to think about, and Paul Brassard is looking down from up there saying, "Get blood in my name." I just don't think that's a common topic up there, wherever up there is.
Ray, you have been part of this movement in this community, both the prison movement and the GLBT community. And certainly we've seen a lot of progress, but we haven't seen a lot of progress.
Oh, there's work to be done everywhere. Yeah, I was not able to. You said prison community. That's a misnomer. I set out thinking that I could do with convicts what I had previously been a major part of doing with gay, lesbian, and transgendered people. I went to work fully aware how they are driven by their guilt and their shame that is imposed on them by the culture. And I worked on that aggressively. I thought the most important way to deal with that is to role model specifically not being shamed, not living in a closet, kind of in-your-face, shock value kind of stuff.
You've never hid the fact that you were in the system.
No. I don't have anything in my closet. One time I was running against Jim Westmoreland for city council, and Jim called Clyde Wilson, the old private detective, into his office. And he said, Clyde, I want you to find something about Ray Hill that we can use in the campaign. Clyde went laughing. His son, who had just gotten out of prison, was sitting in the room. That's how I know all this. And Clyde started laughing, and Jim said, what's funny? And he said, everything the rest of us would hide from the world, Ray Hill rubs in our faces. There is nothing to tell about Ray Hill that he doesn't talk about loudly and frequently. And it's true. If I got a plane this evening, if I were going to fly to Newark on a cheap Southwest airline flight, by the time that plane landed, the lady on my left and the young man on my left would know that I'm a queer ex-convict.
Now, you were once general manager of the station.
I was.
And when you became general manager, was there not some concern of the fact that you were, that the FCC sort of has this?
Well, the old Comstock rules that blended over into the FCC rules said in order to manage broadcast facilities, one had to be of good moral character. So when I became manager, the lawyer said, no, you can't do that. And I said, why? And they said, well, the rule says here, good moral character. Well, what does that legally mean? Well, we're not sure, but damn sure no perverts and damn sure no convicts. And I said, well, notify the FCC that we are not in compliance with that rule. And that's an idea that had never occurred to them.
Right, right.
And so they sent a letter to FCC. Our Pacifica radio station in Houston, Texas, KPFT, has a general manager that may, they couldn't say did not, they say may not meet the definition of good moral character. And so then we got a letter back saying, okay, we will put that on the next meeting of the commission. Would you like to present a proposal? And so the lawyer said, now we got to go do a proposal. And I said, no, that's an invitation. It's not an order. Tell them thank you very much, but we're not going to be there. And so they did that. And so they had a commission meeting, and we got a letter back saying, well, there's some discussion at this commission meeting, but we postponed it all at the request of our legal advisors, and our lawyers are talking about it. And we'll let you know. In the meantime, KPFT in Houston is exempt.
Interesting.
From having to follow Rule 3822, Subtitle B.
Well, you know, the interesting comparison to this is that RKO General owned a number of TV stations, and they had to give them up. Well, there was also another thing that they were lying about their advertising something.
Sure.
Of course, Murdoch also owns a number of TV stations in this country.
Too many, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, including Channel 26 here in Houston. But anyway,
I don't know if you've seen the bumper sticker on my car.
No.
Is turn off Fox, bad news for America.
Well, exactly.
But I'm a frequent guest over at Fox. The last time I went on, they made it. That thing went viral, went all over the world. And I'm responsible for my glutted friend book friends list.
Well, there's going to be some interesting events going on this weekend. How does that reflect to the event that sort of kicked off what happened in here with Anita Bryan?
Well, it could be a duplicate of that. Let me put that into context. Before June the 16th, 1977, the term gay community meant the part of town where the bars were. Gay community was geography. And Anita Bryant comes into town. And we have a welcome to Houston Anita Bryant party. We told the police we're expecting about 500 people, 12,000. That was Gary Van Ottingham's figuring, close enough. Somewhere between 6,000 and 12,000 people showed up. We couldn't be accommodated on the sidewalks, which we were required to go down and stopping at the traffic lights and all that. So Captain Pappy Bond just made, I don't know, we're on Smith and we're on Louisiana, which street you're in both? And he used an expletive that would curl your hair. And so we moved in the street, and we had gone like four blocks, and suddenly gay people, gay men, lesbians, transgendered people, bisexuals, our friends and allies, owned a piece of property that we had previously been forgiven. As an activist, I want you all to think about what that does to your crowd.
And there's an incredible parallel scene in the movie Milk.
Yeah.
That you really need to see that.
Sure.
And that also sort of like moves on to
Anita and all of Harvey's closest friends. Of course, Harry Britt, I guess, was written out of script for some reason or other, but Harry is the one that actually replaced Harvey on the Board of Supervisors. And Harry's from Beaumont. He's a Methodist minister in Beaumont. And so they had his campaign manager, and they had Cleve Jones and all of that there, and they were fretting, would people turn out? Then all of a sudden, there was this sea of people that stretched from Castro down and occupied all of Market Street all the way to City Hall with candlelights. And some of what you saw in the movie is actual footage from that
yes.
night as news footage. And it was an enormous outpouring. Those kinds of things, like the Aaron Sherhorn Memorial Garden dedication, those kind of gatherings, rituals, and events build community. It's bonding time in time of grief, in time of fear, in time of frustration, in time of celebration. We went to march down those streets around the hotel where Anita was performing into City Hall. We went angry individual, but we came back a community. And the next morning when we got up, the term gay community meant a large group of people with common goals and aspirations. Mm-hmm. Even people who were not there got the impact of that via the media. And of course, at the time, I was doing Wildenstein right here in this studio or some reasonable arrangement of the studio. It was different then. And I would come in here and do my own board, and our listenership beat everything else on the station.
Right.
Because of that bonding.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, Ray, as usual, we love to have you on here. We love to get the piece of history.
But let me talk about this coming Saturday, just briefly.
Okay, but we're doing segments on that, so...
Oh, okay.
Yes. So we're going to cover that. And but briefly, why don't you just say what you want to say?
Well, I am not going to the Democratic event because it's a direct conflict with the prayer of Palooza, the fasting prayer of all those people driving those Mercury Grand Marquis and taking up two parking spaces out at the Dome parking lot. And so I'm going to be with the rabble out on the street, and I'm thinking of cooking a little food to offer them as they're stuck in traffic, as they're driving by, because they're supposed to be fasting. The average age of the attendees will be late 50s, mid-60s. And they're going to be fasting. And I know why the mayor wants them here, is they're going to be dropping like flies in those
heat.
Long security lines in Houston, August weather. And as of last Friday, they had 15,000 pledged attendees to put in a stadium that will hold 71,000 butts. It's going to look like a cleanup crew. This is going to be excruciatingly embarrassing for the governor and for the Tea Party and for the fundamentalist people. Their time has passed. As I said on that famous Fox interview, I don't care how nostalgic you are for 1954, she ain't coming back.
Ray, how do we access your radio show?
TheRayHill.com. TheRayHill.com.
Ray Hill is a occasional guest here on this radio show. Actually, we also call him our Supreme Court reporter because he does such a good job in predicting the outcome of the votes.
Nina Totenberg, eat your heart out.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
Back. I'm John Torres.
And I'm Natalie Peoples.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 30th, 2011. It took 17 years, but the United Nations Economic and Social Council, or ECOSOC, has restored the consultative status of the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans, and Intersex Association, best known by the acronym ILGA. Only 11 other LGBT groups out of about 3,000 non-governmental organizations have won ECOSOC accreditation. It allows them to attend UN conferences and meetings, submit written reports and oral statements, and host panels in UN buildings. ILGA had ECOSOC status from 1993 to 1994, but lost it following a scandal orchestrated by the U.S. right wing, charging that several of ILGA's 700 member organizations from more than 110 countries had questionable age of consent policies. ILGA later expelled a small number of problematic member groups and made the wording of its constitution stronger on the issue. 29 nations voted on July 25th to restore ILGA's status, ranging from Argentina to Venezuela, and including most European Union countries, along with Canada, Australia, Mexico, and the U.S. 14 nations voted against the group, ranging from Bangladesh to Senegal, and including several other Islamic and African countries, along with Russia and China. 6 nations abstained. A statement by ILGA Co-Secretary General Renato Sabadini called the reinstatement historic and specifically thanked Belgium for its relentless efforts in building a consensus around us, together with the United States and Argentina.
But Uganda's so-called Kill the Gays bill will soon be reintroduced in Parliament, according to the U.S.-based Center for Constitutional Rights. The measure, which was met with global condemnation last year and never came to a vote, imposes the death penalty for a second conviction of engaging in private adult consensual gay sex. It also imposes prison time for anyone who fails to report people they suspect of being gay to the authorities. According to the center, a new version of the anti-homosexuality bill will appear to have removed the death penalty in order to avoid international outcry. In reality, it appears that provisions of the bill will link to other laws that will trigger the death penalty. The Advocate also cited Uganda expert Warren Throckmorton, who said late this week that MP Otto Odonga told him that the anti-homosexuality bill could return by the end of August. Odonga is infamous for once having said that if his son came out as gay, he would kill him.
LGBT activists in northern Cyprus are calling for the decriminalization of private consensual adult gay sex after local media reported that 2 men arrested at a Nicosia hostel were being charged with sexual relations against nature. According to the UK website Pink News, a conviction for unnatural intercourse brings up to 5 years in prison. While Cyprus has repealed laws against homosexuality, the Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus has not. Antiquated British colonial-era laws were maintained even after the island became an independent nation in 1960. The LGBT advocacy group Initiative Against Homophobia, which has lobbied for repeal of the law for years, says this week's arrests disprove lawmakers' contention that the anti-gay law was no longer in effect. In a media statement, the group charged that it is the state's responsibility to protect the human rights of every citizen who lives in this country.
That message has thus far fallen on deaf ears in the lower house of the Italian Parliament. By a vote of 293 to 250 this week, the Chamber of Deputies rejected a bill to ban discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. Paolo Pantani leads the national advocacy group, Arcigay. He's asking the European Union to intervene, calling the outcome of the vote outrageous. This parliament has betrayed justice and civility and has decided to support the violent. Citing alarming reports of increased anti-queer attacks, he called on the EU to help us face this extremely dangerous rise in homophobia. Conservatives, aligned with embattled Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi, dominate the lower house of parliament. Berlusconi notoriously responded last year to criticism of his alleged affairs with minors by saying, "It's better to be passionate about beautiful girls than to be gay."
Elsewhere, the Jerusalem Post reported that more than 4,000 LGBT people and their supporters waved rainbow flags and marched peacefully in the city's 10th annual Pride and Tolerance Parade on July 28th. The procession was absent the violence by religious fundamentalist opponents that has marred the event in recent years, including stabbings and other physical assaults. 18 people were arrested for trying to violently disrupt last year's parade. Opponents were kept at bay this year by about 1,000 police officers lining the parade route. One man, reportedly an ultra-Orthodox Jew, was arrested for throwing bags of what were described as foul-smelling liquid from his apartment onto the marchers. And police prevented a small group of demonstrators from bringing four donkeys to the parade route. Their spokesman said they wanted to protest gay sex as a beastly act. The theme of the march was Intertwined Paths, which organizers said honored the way the movement for sexual minority rights has merged with popular struggles for equality, adequate housing, a minimum wage, and other social issues. Openly gay MP Nitzan Horowitz, who spoke before the march, said it went far beyond the gay community and called it a symbol of the struggle for freedom in Jerusalem. And a small counter-demonstration led by a fundamentalist Christian preacher in Belfast did not deter thousands from marching with pride through that city center on July 30th for what was called the largest such event in Ireland.
In other news, hundreds of lesbian and gay couples began marrying in New York, literally at the stroke of midnight on July 24th. That was the first day the law creating civil marriage equality took effect in the Empire State. Dale Ghetto and Barbara Lavin in Albany may have been the first. Mayor Gerald Jennings said he spoke the key phrase at 1 second after midnight. A minute or so later, Niagara Falls Mayor Paul Deister married Kitty Lambert and Cheryl Rudd at the Falls, which were lit with rainbow lights. More than 40 other lesbian and gay couples got married there later that day. In New York City, Mayor Michael Bloomberg officiated at the wedding of his staff members, John Feinblatt and Jonathan Mintz, on the steps of Gracie Mansion, the mayor's official residence. A conservative group, the ironically named New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms, filed suit on July 25th to invalidate the marriages, alleging irregularities in the legislative and enactment processes around the law. But a spokesman for Governor Andrew Cuomo dismissed the suit as without merit.
Meanwhile, the California Supreme Court announced this week that it would hear oral arguments on September 6th, the first day of its next session, as to whether sponsors of the marriage equality banning Proposition 8 have what's called legal standing to appeal a district court's ruling declaring the measure unconstitutional. California's governor and attorney general refused to appeal Judge Vaughn Walker's August 2010 decision. The case is currently before the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which earlier this year asked California's High Court to rule on whether, under state law, sponsors of voter-approved initiatives have the authority or standing to assert the state's interest when public officials fail to do so. If the state's High Court justices determine that Prop 8 supporters have no legal standing to appeal, the Ninth Circuit Court is likely to uphold the district court ruling that overturned the measure. The California Supreme Court must issue its ruling within 90 days of the hearing.
Colombia's constitutional court ordered lawmakers this week to extend marriage rights to gay and lesbian couples within 2 years. The country already offers civil unions, but the court said that Congress must create the equivalent of full civil marriage for gay and lesbian couples by June 20, 2013. It also ruled that same-gender couples in de facto unions meet the definition of family. And the court said that if lawmakers fail to meet its June 2013 deadline, lesbian and gay couples would automatically gain the right to go to any judge or notary public to formalize their union. But Colombian lawmakers have already rejected 6 marriage equality bills. The country's powerful Roman Catholic Church and other Christian denominations lobbied against each effort. So while most LGBT activists called the court ruling a step forward, they say they're not holding their breath waiting for Congress to act.
James Chang of Taiwan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs confirmed this week that spouses of lesbian and gay diplomats are not entitled to the same full diplomatic immunity given to their heterosexual counterparts. A diplomatic official had anonymously complained to local media that his same-gender partner was not being offered a diplomatic visa. The spouse in question was reportedly issued an alien residence certificate instead, a simple ID card for foreign residents. But Chang said that the ministry will examine how other countries handle such situations.
But finally, a nautical Norwegian lesbian couple has been hailed as heroic after they braved bullets to save as many as 40 people from mass murderer Anders Breivik. The Christian extremist, whose writings rail against an Islamic influx in Europe, shot and killed 68 young people at an island political retreat on July 22nd, and then killed 8 more with a bombing in Oslo. According to local media reports, Hege Dahlen and Toril Hansen were having dinner at a campsite opposite Utøyan Island when they heard screaming and gunshots. The couple made four trips across the water, ferrying groups of bloody and frightened young people to safety as bullets hit the side of their boat. In an understated translation of one report, Dahlin is quoted as saying that, "We did not sleep last night at all."
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 30th, 2011. Written by Gray Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride. Read the text of this week's News Wrap online at thiswayout.org.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Natalie Peoples.
And I'm John Torres.
This is Queer Voices.
And this is Brian Levinka.
And Jennifer Renee.
And Jennifer, you know, there's a lot of things going on this weekend, and I wanted to highlight one indoor event. A lot of things will be happening outside.
This outside, and it's supposed to be 104.
Yeah, it's going to be insane.
I mean, this is Texas.
I wonder if that was part of the planning, is to have in August.
If I was going to do something, I would want to do it inside.
Well, Jennifer, you know what? We have just such an event.
We do?
Yes.
What day is it? Is it going to be on Saturday?
It's going to be on Saturday morning.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I think, yes, it's the...
Well, maybe we can get some people on here who really know about it and can talk about it.
Well, I think we have them in the studio.
Yes. Our favorite guests.
Robert Shipman and Brad Pritchett.
Brad Pritchett, yes.
Who are the co-chairs of the Harris County Democratic Party event, Trailblazers Brunch.
Trailblazers, GLBT Trailblazers. It's great having you guys here.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
So, tell us about this brunch.
It's a trailblazer, so we got some trailblazers. But what it is, when's it going to be, first of all?
It's going to be on Saturday, this coming Saturday, August the 6th, and it starts at 9:30. It's going to be at the Hyatt Regency downtown. And it's basically the Harris County Democratic Party's official response to Rick Perry's prayer event. We're kind of deeming it a celebration of diversity, celebrating the diversity of the Democratic Party and the contributions that have been made by LGBT trailblazers, not just to the LGBT community, but to the community at large.
And this is a series of trailblazers. There's been...
Correct.
This is our turn, I guess.
Exactly. Harris County Democratic Party started, I guess, about 3 years ago, or 2 years ago, doing Trailblazers events, focusing on different populations and recognizing people in certain areas. So they began with a Trailblazers Women's Brunch, and they honored people like Ann Richards and Billy Carr and people like that. They've continued through the African-American community and most recently the Latino community. And they had already determined that they were going to do an LGBT Trailblazer event. And it was some preliminary discussions about it earlier this year. And when this prayer response event came up, everybody said, wow, what a great juxtaposition for us to go across town while they're being negative and hateful and, you know, doing all their things over there, to come over here and let's celebrate the positive things that our community has done. The LGBT people, not only for the LGBT community, but like Brad said, for everyone else. And so we see this as a very positive, joyful occasion in direct response to the hate.
Well, and the other thing is that since it's a brunch and it's in the morning, if you want to do any of the other events within the city, you still have plenty of time to do so.
Absolutely. You know, this is from, like Brad said, 9:30 in the morning, so we should be done around noon. So you have plenty of time to go do everything else.
Well, there's the prayer, that event that's coming up that we talked about in the opening of the show at the Unitarian Church.
And that's mid-afternoon, I believe.
That's 2 o'clock. Yeah. So there's plenty of time to, you can be busy all day. Being a participant.
And I think I understand correctly that you have a special guest that will be outside your event, a special guest from Kansas, Westboro Baptist Church.
Yes.
So you have the honor of being picketed?
Well, to be fair, they're not just picketing us. They're spreading themselves all over Houston. So
this must be a hot spot that weekend.
There are only, 5 or 10 of them?
Well, I think
it's only one family.
It's one family.
Like 14, yeah. Maybe. Somewhere around there.
I mean, just to walk across the Westboro picket line, man.
And they're protesting Perry also.
They're protesting, I believe that weekend, they're protesting the Perry event, which brought them to town. They are also protesting the Coast Guard. They are protesting Lakewood Church. They are even protesting the Astros game that Saturday evening.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Gosh, it should have been LGBT week at the Astro Game.
Exactly.
Pride in the Park would have been perfect.
It would have been. Somebody should have timed that better.
But, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we got an email from our contact, a planner at the Hyatt, and she said, my security told us about, you know, this Westboro people. Do you know about it? And we had not become aware of it until that point. And Brad and I just said to each other, well, you know you've arrived when Westboro Baptist Church.
If you're on the picket list. Yeah.
Congratulations to you in our local Democratic Party.
In a weird way, this is an honor to be protested by them.
Well, I mean, it's going to have the opposite effect that they typically would want it to have. I mean, we consider it kind of a good thing that they're going to be here protesting it, because it's just another way to, like Robert was saying, we're trying to focus on the positives of it. And, you know, holding signs that say God hates fags in front of this event kind of emphasizes the fact that we're celebrating not only LGBT trailblazers, but LGBT families and people who basically make a contribution every day to being citizens and basically helping our society in a number of different ways.
Let's talk about the event. Who is it honoring? Can we talk
about
that?
Sure. Well, you know, obviously there's no shortage of people in the LGBT community that are worthy of recognition. And when we began this process, the list of names was dozens upon dozens long. And this is a recurring event. So this, although it's the first, it certainly won't be the last Trailblazers Brunch. And recognizing what's been in the past, we've decided to work with six honorees this time around. And, on that list, we have, of course, Mayor Parker.
We have Councilmember Sue Lovell. Not only is she openly gay on City Council, but she's also a member of the Democratic National Committee. And as Democrats, it's important for us, and LGBT Democrats, it's important for us to have a voice helping to influence the party and the platform that the party adopts every year. So we felt it was absolutely necessary to honor Councilmember Lovell.
And, you know, another name that I think everybody is very familiar with is Judge Fry, mm-hmm. Phyllis Randolph
Phyllis Fry.
Yeah. And she's a trailblazer for many reasons. I think today...
She puts the T in the trailblazer.
She sure does. And I think one of
she
the things...
She put the T in judge to the T in trailblazer.
I think she put the T in pants for ladies,
That's where I was headed. The one thing that sticks in my mind most about what Phyllis has accomplished is allowing women to wear pants that have a fly or zipper in the front. Until
that's right.
Was 79 or 1980, I believe, was when that city ordinance was repealed. You know, another name on our list is Linda Morales. She is an attorney. She was the first attorney in the state of Texas to challenge the sodomy law, the 2006 penal code, I believe in 1990. And she's been involved both in not only in the Latino community, the Latino lesbian community, and the LGBT community for quite some time.
And then we're honoring Judge Stephen Kirkland, who actually has more constituents than Mayor Parker, which is interesting to think about.
That's true.
He is the countywide LGBT representative. And then we're honoring posthumously Judge John Paul Barnish, who was the first openly gay court judge in the state of Texas, who passed away in, I believe it was 2009. So it's a list, and like Robert said, the list actually got much longer after I spoke with Councilmember Lovell to inform her that we were going to include her on the list. She gave me another 25 or 30 names that she said these would all be great people to have, and we already had a huge list that had whittled down.
Yeah, but you have a brunch, and it's only so long, yeah. And you got to have a program, and you're done.
I think one thing that we have decided to do as well that I think is really important, and Brad touched on this earlier, 25, 30 years ago, the activism was on the streets. It was in the gay community geographically. It was in Montrose. It was the bars. People were afraid to physically be out. And that fight, although it continues, is not as predominant as some of the other fights. The fight now is in the streets and the suburbs. And so when you have LGBT families who have kids in school, those are today's trailblazers. It's a little bit different. So we decided to issue a seventh award, and we are honoring everyday LGBT trailblazer families. So we have a young gentleman who named Kendall Scudder, who is I believe he's a senior at Sam Houston, and he was raised by two lesbians. And
that is incredible.
Yes, he's going to come present an award to a family that are members of Houston Stonewall Young Democrats who are young, raising their young daughter, Janae. I believe she's four, and her dads, Nash and Paul, are both going to be there. And we're trying to get as many other LGBT families there, so that award will be presented to all LGBT families, because we feel right now, especially, that trail is happening on the suburban streets.
And I have to say that their daughter, Janae, this year at the Pride Parade, this was the second year that she walked in the Pride Parade with us, and I think that it's interesting to see kind of the changed, it's a little bit of a change from when I first started coming to Pride Parades, when I first came out, like, just after high school. Now we see a lot more families in the parades, mm-hmm. and this is the second year that she's walked with us, and for a four-year-old to walk the entire parade
she's
route,
cool. mm-hmm.
and then walk it all the way back, and do it without ever complaining, while carrying her little glittery sign that says family.
Are you sure she's really only four?
Yeah.
You know, well, she's got the personality of a 22-year-old, but...
sassy, I bet.
Yeah, she's a little sassy, but...
she's a sweetheart. We're honored to know her and yeah. have her as part of our group.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about filling tables. We're talking about the event. We need our people out there, our listeners, to attend the event. And, you know, to me, it's a no-brainer. Do you want to stand outside on the sidewalk at Reliance Stadium, or do you want to be inside having a wonderful brunch?
Well, and I think, you know, I think you can do both.
I think you can do both, but I think this is something important you should
start attend. The morning with on a positive note. You know, come to the brunch, get fed, get energized, get to be around some very positive energy, and learn about, you know, maybe not everybody knows about the accomplishments of some of these individuals. Come learn about your community, come engage them. And then go out with that positive energy.
I think it's a good idea to have this event yeah. the same day. I think it's a very positive message to send.
But I have to say, too, that as far as positive energy is concerned, the mistress of ceremonies for the event is well-known in the community. It's Fiona Dawson.
The pixie Fiona.
The lovely, who just had her birthday. So yes. Happy birthday, Fiona. And I think that if anybody can give you some good energy to go out on, I think Fiona's the person who can do it.
I think it's hard to be mad at Fiona.
Who would ever be mad at Fiona?
How could you do that? Well, we're listening. We're talking about the Trailblazer, GLBT Trailblazer brunch coming up this Saturday. And we're talking, Brian and I are talking with Robert Shipman and Brad Pritchett,
who are the co-chairs of the event.
Yes. Okay, now how can people get tickets?
Very easy. They can go to hcdp.org. And it is on the rotating homepage. There's a link.
Just go to the events.
It's one of the very main pages.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Oh, okay.
The very first slide on the website right now. And all you have to do is click on it. It's simple. The tickets are affordable. We made sure to make them affordable so everybody has the opportunity to attend.
So this isn't a highfalutin event. People can come.
You can be highfalutin, and but you don't have to pay highfalutin prices.
And if you weren't paying attention to the letters, it's the Harris County Democratic Party's
correct.
Website.
HCDP.
Yes.
.org.
Or right. You can just Google it.
Anything else you want our listeners to know?
And the event's also on Facebook. If anybody wants to look for it on Facebook, it has links to the page. You can also get all the information there.
Very good. Well, Robert and Brad, thank you for coming on and join us on Saturday. I'll be there.
Yes.
I'll be there.
At the Trailblazers brunch. It'll be a wonderful event.
We'll be there.
I can't come, but, you know, I heard it'll be a good time.
I
will be there.
Do you think we need security? If we come,
I want to meet Fred Phelps.
I want
to say hello.
Kansas.
I want to kiss him.
He's on oxygen.
I want to walk up and give him a big wet kiss.
He's on oxygen.
He is on oxygen.
Now,
that'd be fortunate.
We have taken care of all those requirements, we'll be fine.
It'll be a safe, fun event for everybody.
So come on out and get the trails blazed and have fun.
Absolutely. This is Queer Voices.
Thank you.
was Jonesy from the album Go, released last year. The name of the song, Animal Arithmetic.
Writers in the Schools employs professional writers who teach long-term creative writing workshops in schools, hospitals, homeless shelters, and other community centers in the Houston area, reaching over 15,000 students annually. By teaching children how to write stories, essays, and poems, Writers in the Schools offers them a creative outlet that will enrich their lives academically and emotionally. To learn more about Writers in the Schools, please call 713-523-3877 or visit www.writersintheschools.org.
This is KPFT Houston.
Sam Gonzalez from the Sharptown High School Broadcasting Program. KPFT has just launched a new paperless system at kpft.org. Now, you can submit public service announcements, open journal proposals, and more through the station website, kpft.org. Going paperless is better for the environment and means your submissions arrive faster to KPFT offices. Do you have a nonprofit community event to promote? Do you have an idea for a program or want to host an open journal? Then visit kpft.org now to submit your application. While there, you can make a pledge online and support the great programming you love. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston. Listeners love KPFT and its programming. Pledge drives, not so much. So this summer, KPFT invites you to participate in a bold experiment and join the 10% of KPFT listeners who donate monthly to KPFT.
Visit kpft.org today, click the Every Member Sustainer button, and do your part to increase that 10% of listeners sustaining to 100%.
With greater sustainer support, KPFT can give you more of the great programming you love. Sustaining members make KPFT's future income predictable and steady, providing the fiscal stability KPFT needs to have fewer pledge drive days.
$5, $10, $15, or $20 a month from you makes all the difference. So visit kpft.org, click the Every Member Sustainer button, and become a sustainer of KPFT quickly and securely online.
You'll also be able to make sure your online donation goes to the credit of your favorite show, and you can pick out a thank you gift too.
Every Member Sustainer, join the club now, kpft.org. I'm Gloria Johnson.
And I'm Sam Gonzalez from the Sharptown High School Broadcasting Program.
This is KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
This is Brian Levinka.
And Jennifer Renee, and we're back.
We're back, and we're kind of going out of order because we just spoke about something that's taking place on Saturday. Now we're going to Friday.
Well, we're never organized.
No, we're gay. We don't.
We're doing it on drag time.
We are. And in the studio, we have Noel Freeman, who on another duty is the president of the Houston GOBT Political Caucus, but he's also instrumental in organizing a rally on Friday. Well, welcome, Noel, and tell us a little bit about what's going on Friday.
Well, thank you both. It's always a pleasure to be here. We are doing LGBT Texans Against Hate. We are going to get together at 7 o'clock p.m. at Tranquility Park downtown to say that hate has no place in Houston, because as we all know, these folks are bringing the hate train to Houston the following day, and we're here to say that we just won't stand up for that.
Is it going to be a rally of some kind, or is it supposed to be what's going to happen?
Yeah, it's going to be a rally. We've got a number of speakers lined up. We want to kind of approach the hate issue from a number of different fronts, a political perspective, a religious perspective, a family perspective, and then we've got our keynote speaker who's going to be State Representative Garnett Coleman to talk about why it's important that hate has no place here in Houston.
Or in Texas, for that matter.
Well, anywhere.
Well, you know, I kind of wonder why was Houston chosen as the site of the response?
I don't think they're officially saying, but I think we could probably read between the lines.
Yeah.
And it could be because we have an openly gay mayor.
Yes.
Do you think that might be
the sponsor of the event, the AFA, American Family Association, thinks that gay people should not be in public office.
Oh, and shouldn't have children either.
Oh, there's a whole list of things.
There's a whole list of things that thou shalt not if you're gay.
Well, one thing that they said is that we should be prosecuted and sentenced as criminals to the same laws that apply to human trafficking. And in the state of Texas, that penalty is life in prison. So I guess they want us to be locked up for the rest of our lives, too.
Hmm. Somehow I don't quite follow that logic,
though. I want to see them put the mayor in prison for life.
You do?
Well, I mean, if they're going to follow their laws, I want to see them try to put Anise into jail.
Well, but that's...
See how far that goes.
Well, but the fact is that the Supreme Court overturned...
Exactly.
That being gay is not illegal anymore.
No, it's not.
So, therefore, it's bogus. But they're going to say what they want to say, and they're going to continue doing it. But this is our answer... or the community's answer to it? What started it? Was it just that Perry's doing something, we need to do something?
Well, it's a lot less about Rick Perry and a lot more about these organizations like the American Family Association, John Hagee, and, of course, we have Westboro Baptist Church coming to town. If Rick Perry, I mean, our take on it really is, if Rick Perry wants to be a man of faith, we don't really have a problem with that. I mean, I'm a man of faith. My faith is very important to me. We have a lot of members of the community who are people of faith, and it has a very strong place in their lives. And so this isn't, you know, we're not saying that it's not okay for him to have faith. That's fine. The problem we have is that it's being hosted by the American Family Association, who gained notoriety in opposing equality, in speaking out against GLBT individuals. And, you know, these are the folks who called us Nazis and said we are responsible for the Holocaust. That's how they made a name for themselves, and they're the headliner. And I'm sorry, but there's just not a place for that in Houston or any place in the United States.
And to be clear, this is not an anti-prayer, anti-religion rally.
Oh, no.
No, no. It's an anti-hate. Or, as I like to think of it, a love rally. Anti-hate / love.
I was there during those love rallies. I was young, but I was there.
You know, and it's just... Like Noah's saying, it does not belong in Houston. Hate is not welcome.
Well, the whole premise of them bringing this event, I'm talking about the Perry event, the Family Association bringing that event to Houston, is to showcase where they stand in a negative way. Is that not the case?
No, it is, and the some of the organizers of the event. I guess they're calling it Prayer Palooza. That's what the Houston Press calls.
Prayer Palooza.
I love that.
Prayer Palooza.
But some of the organizers have said that, you know, it is to pray for our nation against the ills of the spreading acceptance of homosexuality, and that's one of their missions. So there is a distinctly anti-GLBT bent to at least part of what's going to be going on Saturday.
Well, that's a perfect segue to congratulate you on your first year of marriage.
Thank you very much.
Tonight is the anniversary.
Tonight is your anniversary. That was a perfect segue.
And another thing about the rally is it's kind of electrified the state. There's people coming in from all over the state, from Austin and from Dallas, that are coming to protest the event, but they'll be here Friday night. So it's kind of drawing LGBT Texans. So we're kind of pulling them in.
No,
they're upset about this.
Well, they should rightly be so.
Mm-hmm.
And Ray Hill in the first segment was talking about how the Anita Bryant event, Anita Bryant being here, sort of coalesced the scattered GLBT community and coalesced it into a community, not just in Montrose, but all over, because they came from everywhere to be part of the protest against her. This is the reason why we come together. The community is incredibly large, and it's important to give them give us a venue to speak out and to be part of who we are.
Absolutely. I think it's important. You know, we have moved beyond a lot of the really big fights. You know, many of us can live our daily lives, go to our jobs, and be who we are, and it's no big deal. I mean, I think everybody at my job knows that I'm, you know, married to Brad, and you know, we're not necessarily afraid to be who we are. And a lot has changed since the Anita Bryant days and all the activism that Ray Hill has done over the years. But, you know, somehow the more things change, the more they stay the same. And, you know, back in 1977, Gary Van Ottingham, who was the president of the Caucus at the time, wrote Anita Bryant a letter and offered her $1,000 to the charity of her choice or to herself if she would come debate equality and to debate GLBT issues. You know, and she ignored them. And that's the same thing that we see today. The folks at AFA don't want to face the realities of the situation. They want to continue to be on the wrong side of history. They can't come up with reasonable arguments for the hatred that they want to spew. It's ridiculous. But again, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And that's why it's important for us as a community to stick with the fight and continue to oppose hate anytime it rears its ugly head.
And I think what we see as the effect of hate is, you know, from the Montrose Memorial Center dedication a couple of days ago, we saw the effect that hate has. Either people are attacked or that, you know, suicide. So hate has a very long-lasting effect.
Oh, yeah, and the where we have the transgender memorial, the Day of Remembrance in November, is all about the murders of transgender individuals or perceived transgender individuals who have been murdered.
You know, we have to stop hate before it spreads. I mean, it's kind of like a virus, just kind of oozes out and kind of infects everything that it touches.
Now, who's invited to the Friday night event?
Everybody.
We want everybody.
Can they bring
everybody.
The kids?
Absolutely. This is a family-friendly event.
Do we have any limits on the space? It's at Tranquility Park, and I don't...
As long as people will fit, that's fine. As long as they're not blocking the street, because we don't want anybody to get hit by a car. But
I mean, it's a pretty large space, so...
It is. It's an entire city block.
I don't think it has an occupancy, does it?
No.
So we could literally have all of Gay Houston show up on Friday night, and we would like that. Because this is a moment where we can come together and stand together and say... Hate? No, I don't think so.
Now, I had heard there was a rumor that a celebrity was coming to town Friday night.
Is that Jennifer Poole?
That would be nice. No, Rachel Maddow.
You know, I had heard something about that, but I hadn't heard many details about
it. She's supposed to be here on Friday.
She is welcome to come. We'll put her right up on stage. She'd come say hi.
We've been trying to get her to come, and we've been kind of tweeting, and we've kind of been... I actually emailed her. I was kind of excited, but I haven't heard anything. So it's like emailing Rachel Maddow is kind of crazy. But who knows? There's not a lot of, I don't think there's anything else really going on this Friday. So I think we're kind of the only game in town in terms of.
Well, she isn't on Friday nights usually.
Yeah. So
she tapes the show in the afternoon and then she leaves. She's
perfectly
gone.
Fine to come. Rachel, come and visit us.
Well, we formally invite you, Rachel Maddow, to come to Houston this coming Friday and be part of the event. What are we calling the event?
LGBT Texans Against Hate.
Texas Against Hate. I love that. That's good.
I will say, though, anybody who wants to show up, dress comfortably, dress cool. It's going to be hot, hot, hot.
We're going to have water. We're going to have ice. But
102 degrees.
I was going to say, what about...
You know, in August in Houston is not cool.
No, the sun is still up somewhat.
So come early and get the shaded spots, I'm saying. Because it's going to, you know, it's covered. Tranquility Park has some shaded areas, so it's not like it's beating
it's
down.
It's going to be at 7, and about how long is it going to run?
I think the program's probably going to last about a half an hour. We don't want to keep people out in the hot sun too long.
Yeah, we don't want to have people drowning on about, you know, everything. So we want to kind of get in there, say, okay, we're here, we're queer, we hate, and then we go.
And people can jump in the fountain if they get that hot, and that'd be great.
Are there any city prohibitions against that?
They haven't told me any. The Parks Department might not like it.
It could turn into a pool party.
As long as we clean up after ourselves, we're fine.
So we do need volunteers, though. So if you're out there and you want to help us kind of help.
If you wanted to get involved with this on the organizational side, how could somebody that's listening to us tonight get...
Well, that's interesting, Jennifer, that you asked that, because it's kind of a coalition of different organizations.
Okay.
Yes, the
Houston GOP. What are the names of some of these organizations?
Well, the Houston GOP Political Caucus is instrumental. It's kind of putting everything together. We have Houston Stonewall Young Democrats. They're helping. They're going to be speaking. Equality Texas is coming on board. They want to speak. We have a new group from the Montrose Memorial, Living Out Loud. Freddie Jensen, I don't know if you heard her speak.
No, I haven't.
She was very emotional. Her son was killed, her gay son. Mm-hmm. And she spoke at the memorial last week.
Oh, that was who the...
Freddie Jensen.
Okay.
She contacted us, and then she wanted to be part of this, and she's very emotional.
It was very, very moving.
And so she will be speaking, too. So we're still kind of building that. But it's a bunch of different organizations in the community.
Yeah, we also have the Houston GLBT Community Center and Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church is also a part of this as well.
And we're going to have an invocation. So at the beginning, you know, it's not an anti-hate, anti-religion. We're going to kind of stay with what we're there for.
Well, and that truly is the spiritual answer to hate.
Right. So if you're listening and you feel that hate is not a part of the Houston community and you feel like you want to do something, Friday night is your answer. Please come and join us. It won't be very long. We just want to kind of have a gathering and, you know, make our point and then go about our way.
It's important that all of us get out there. You know, if you've got the time on Friday evening, come downtown. It'll be at Discovery Green.
No. It's at Tranquility Park.
Tranquility. Oh, that's on the other side of town.
Yeah. It's by
City
Hall.
Good. I'm glad that
it's kind of across
that.
The street from Hobby Center.
I know exactly where to try to. It's across from Hobby Center, and it's a very good area. And you can, afterwards, you can then go over to the plaza.
Yeah, or, you know, go have food at one of the restaurants.
I'm wondering, this is, when you said it was against hate and all, there's got to be a moment at which someone said, we've got to do something, and this is what we need to do. What was that, and when was it?
I think almost immediately there was a universally negative response. Once the word got out that AFA and John Hagee and all these other folks were involved, and quite a number of leaders in the GLBT community said, you know, we've got to do something about this. We can't let this happen. We can't let these folks come to Texas or Houston. We can't let them come to our turf and spew their hatred. And Brian there got a Facebook page going pretty quickly. And
I was mad. I was at the movie theater, and it was like a Sunday, and I'm like, what are we going to do? I'm like, we got to do something.
And what did you do?
I created a Facebook. I created LGBT Texans Against Hate, and it was kind of a statewide inclusion and advocacy group to kind of rally the troops and decide what we're going to do.
Well, that was what Perry was doing.
Exactly. Okay. But this is the gay version. Mm-hmm. So the gays were upset. And, you know, there was kind of an immediate outcry from everyone about the AFA being included and sponsoring the event. I mean, that's insult to injury to sponsor this event in our backyard, this hate group. So we started this group, this Facebook group, and out of that came a bunch of dialogue, and we decided to do a rally, and this is kind of the result of that. And so it allows everyone to come into town the night before the response, the prayer event, and kind of gather and kind of state our position. And then, you know, we're really the only game in town. There's a bunch of protests on Saturday, but on Friday we're kind of the only thing. So,
well, it's speaking out early. Well, that's great work. So this came out of a Facebook site.
Well, it started kind of as just an email and kind of the community being upset, but a Facebook group was created out of that.
In over what period of time?
This was about 2 months ago. When did they announce this, Noel? It was beginning of summer.
Yeah, it was 7 or 8 weeks ago. And
it was pre-Pride, because I remember we were...
But, you know, a lot of it just happened really, really fast, and the community came together really quickly, and we said, hey, you know, let's start getting something going. And we kind of coalesced around the Facebook page, because LGBT Texans Against Hate really sums it up better than I think anybody else could come up with. And so we just kind of coalesced around that and started developing what we wanted it to be, where we wanted it to be. And we made a point not to have it on that Saturday. Hmm. Because if people wanted to be a part of what we were doing and maybe be a part of some of these other things, there are some other things going on that are really, I would say, separate from the GLBT community. There's some faith stuff, some separation of church and state. But we wanted to give people the opportunity to do as much as they wanted to. And I'll be honest, you know, we wanted some attention on this because, as we all know, Rick Perry is considering running for president of the United States. And so he's going to get national media coverage on this. And we want to offer our counterpoint to these groups that he's getting behind, that he's getting support from, and that he's supporting by his presence at that event. And it would allow the media the opportunity to not have to be in two places at the same time. So if they want to come out and hang out with us on Friday night, that's great. And then they
Rachel,
can go.
Rachel, this is you.
That's right. Come on, Rachel. We've got a space waiting for you. I'll buy you dinner.
And we have 700 rainbow flags that will be available on the day of. On the
small ones or big ones? Or
little happy, little gay ones. We can kind of wave and be gay and wave our little flags and say, you know, hate's bad. So,
well, one of the things, how do I find out more information?
Well, I would invite you to go to the Facebook group, LGBT Texans Against Hate. Just do a search and you can join there. That has all the information. Or you can just show up Friday. You know where it is. It's Tranquility Park.
Tranquility Park, 7 p.m.
7 p.m. Get there a little bit early. I mean,
this Friday.
Scope out a spot. You know, you never know. We don't know how many people are coming. We have all of the facilities to have a large group. We have porta potties. We have security. We got, you know, all that stuff. But we don't know how many people are coming.
You have plenty of water.
We're going to get plenty of water because we want our people to be safe and hydrated.
So they need to really get down there a little early, right after work, grab the family, grab the kids, and head downtown. Right.
And you know what? It's not just LGBT. We want our straight allies there. We want everybody that's on our side that thinks that this is wrong. The AFA does not belong here in Houston, sponsoring an event on Saturday. That's who we want.
Are you expecting Fred Phelps?
We are. Well, maybe not Fred, but maybe Roper, Phelps, whatever. The daughters and their kids.
The disciples.
They usually like to send a small group to town, and they're going to be running around town on a pretty tight schedule. And, hey, you know, if they want to come by and protest our event, that's fine. I'll stop by and say hi. And
we will shower them with love. We'll take their hate and we'll respond with love.
Well, we've been talking with Noel Freeman, president of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus, and our own Brian Helvinka, co-host here on Queer Voices, about the event coming up this Friday night at Tranquility Park at 7 p.m. And again, it's called
LGBT Texans Against Hate.
And you can find out information.
Just go to Facebook and do a search for LGBT Texans Against Hate.
All right. And this is Queer Voices.
Thank you.
talking about, but now all I can say is, girl, shut your damn mouth. Next time is the last time. You've been walking one hell of a thin line. Let it out, please say what you feel. Cause at the end, you're...
That was Lori Michaels, the name of the song Tattletale, actually a single released this year. Our thanks to J.D. Doyle for providing the music that we're playing here. And if you like this kind of music and you'd like to hear more of it, just go to J.D.'s website. It's queermusicheritage.com. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
And Daniel Williams.
Welcome to our show, Daniel.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here.
Yes. Daniel is a pleasant addition to our program. Our hostess. Or, you know, they like to do the introduction, you know, and the rest of the Queer Voices crew.
Yes, I'm now one of the
rest.
That's
us. You're one of the rest of us. And who do we have? We've got a guest in here. Adam?
We do indeed. We have Reverend Adam Robinson from First Unitarian Universalist Church of Houston. Welcome, Adam.
Thank you for having me.
And what are you here to talk to us about today?
I'm going to talk to you about the inclusive interfaith prayer service that we're having over at our church on Saturday afternoon.
This Saturday?
Yes, this Saturday.
There's a lot going on this Saturday.
Yes, there is. And... always when a question comes up there and the event's coming up, what prompted the event to be created?
Well, there was I'm a member of, and we're trying to get started and actually have stuff going on with the Houston Clergy Council. And we wrote a letter about the prayer meeting that's going on down at Reliant this Saturday and addressed some
prayer
concerns.
Palooza?
The prayer meeting that's going on down at Reliant, and we expressed some of our concerns, and then we needed to do something more, something to try and give people an alternative to going down there, somewhere where actually it could be inclusive and it could be actually interfaith.
You said you expressed some of your concerns in this letter that the council wrote. What were your concerns with the event?
Well, the three major concerns were we had concerns about First Amendment issues, the line between church and state, and that we were clergy persons and not state persons, and the statement we made was to let us do the ministry and to let the politicians do the governing. The second concern was that this event, if you go to the website, is very much not interfaith. I mean, they try to keep saying that, yes, anybody can come, but it's obviously a very mainstream evangelical an event, and there's nothing wrong with that, except that we have people from a lot of different faiths, especially here in Houston, who also engage in some kind of prayer and would like to be able to offer their prayers up on behalf of the state and the country and themselves and our city. So we felt that we needed to make some space for that. And then the other thing is that being aligned with a group that is on the Southern Poverty Law Center's list of hate groups is not a kind of ideal position that I would want to be in when I was hosting a prayer event. So we have invited, there's going to be representatives from the Gay Men's Chorus and the ladies one, I can't remember the name, and they're going to kill me. The Bayou City, I don't remember, but anyway.
The choral groups from the Bayou City Pouring Arms.
Right, yes. They're going to come over. They couldn't get everybody
together.
You owe
together. Me one.
No, because I'll get phone calls because they all know where my office is. They used to rehearse in our building, so. So we intentionally created a open space to do that kind of work.
Now, when you say your event is interfaith, what does that mean? You have Baptist and Methodist, or...?
No. That's not interfaith.
So what is it, Jermaine?
We actually have, one of my friends who's a Nichiren Buddhist is going to be there. Somebody from Temple Emmanuel is going to be there. Mm-hmm. So I have Buddhists and Jewish people. There's a whole bunch of secular humanists that are part of my congregation, and they're going to come. For those people who don't actually hold, for non-theists, I actually have set aside in the middle of the service a good protracted time of silence so that they are able to enjoy meditation or however they send their energy out to create a better world, too. We have Unitarians that are going to be there, of course, and then Christians that are going to be there. So we've got a good cross-section of interfaith stuff. Oh, and some of the folks from the Turquoise Mosque are going to come down too and give us some things from the Muslim perspective. So
it truly is interfaith.
Yeah.
As opposed to, am I missing the term? What's the ecumenical?
Ecumenical would be if you just invited all different kinds of Christians.
All the Christians. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. Got it.
Which is not a bad thing. Or all the Jews, one faith.
But all different
varieties of it, denominations, if you will, in the Christian perspective.
And interfaith to the point of including atheists and agnostics.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's, I mean, we have a, from a Unitarian Universalist perspective, we have a good amount of people who desire a religious expression, but don't necessarily either aren't sure, like an agnostic isn't sure about a god, or they just don't believe in a god, and then they have a place at our table as well, you know.
Now, you mentioned that the Gay Men's Chorus of Dallas would be performing
Houston would be performing
as, well...
You're going to get in trouble, too.
No, I'm going to get in trouble. What are some of the other musical offerings?
Max Dyer and his group, I can't remember their exact name right now, they're going to come down. I believe it's Voices for Peace. And he does, he's got a cello that he plays, and there's this droning kind of Indian theme to it, and it's really, really beautiful. And we've got Jason Obey, who is our music director at First Church, is going to be doing an offering. And then when the people from the Turquoise Mosque, it crosses that line between prayer and music, because they're going to do a thing, I believe, where they're going to be chanting the names of God. So those are the things that are going on.
Now, this is all going to occur at what time on Saturday?
2:00.
2:00.
First Unitarian Universalist Church, 5200 Fannin Street.
Is there a time of 2 to 4, 2 to 3, or so someone playing it, and is it a family event?
Oh yeah, yeah. I want the whole place to be packed out. You know, I want everybody to be there, spilling out onto Fannin Street. Maybe we can stop traffic, and for a good reason. Around 3 is when our actual service is going to be, and then afterwards we're going to have some time for people to just gather and fellowship, and we're going to feed them a little bit, but don't come expecting a whole meal. It's more about being able to interact with people. So yeah, the end is officially going to be 4, but I imagine it'll drag on until 5 or so probably.
And we've talked to a number of people this evening who are organizing various responses to the response. And one of the things that has come up, I think, with everyone we've spoken to this evening is that they aren't opposed to prayer. Mm-hmm. How are you expressing that in your event?
Well, the main thing that I wanted to do when the idea of us doing something was brought up is that I said I did not want to do anything that was protesting, and I've talked about it several times with many people. I'm done defining myself by what I don't hold. I want to define myself by the values that I do hold. When I see something that makes me want to scream and shout and shake the rafters because it's wrong, I need to take time and take a step back and then say, this is the thing that bothers me, but what is the thing that I can put in its place? So these were the 3 things that the Houston Clergy Council talked about bothering them. The First Amendment things, the non-inclusive things, and then the open hate group against GLBT folks and Muslims. And so instead of just railing against that, I wanted to create, when I was asked to do something, I wanted to create something that was actually intentionally inclusive and intentionally interfaith. And so, yeah, I at the end of the letter where I've been inviting clergy, one of the things that I said was, I said, you know, no matter what the distance between the people who are not with us and the people who are with us that day, no matter the theological distance, the physical distance, the ideological distance, that all of our prayers that day are going to be mingled in one and raised up, and they will do what they need to do.
That's beautiful.
It's amazing. Now, how long have you been at the church, at the Unitarian?
I've been about 5 years now.
And so. Is this the first type of event you've done like this one?
This is the first kind of big thing that we've done since I've been there. We've tried to organize some other little things, and we've partnered with people to do some other things, but this is the first big kind of alternative to something else that's going on event that we've done.
And if we want to find out some information,
firstuu.org, firstuu.org. It's right on the front page, top center of the front page. They had
but
to
the
get
best thing
bill.
To remember is the Unitarian Church, and it's on Fannin,
5200 Fannin and Southmore, right down by the edge of the museum district.
And I was actually at the church this last Monday. It's a beautiful building, so for no other reason, you can go to appreciate the architecture.
Yeah. I've been to Sunday women's meetings before.
And you can't hardly miss this. If you go up Southmore, there's a big old rainbow flag. If you go up Fannin, there's a big old rainbow flag. And we're the only church on that street that has them both
rainbow
hanging
flag.
Out.
Yeah, so
you all.
There's not one at the Methodist church down the street?
I think they have one that's on their sign. But, I mean, we have one actually flying. Yeah, so...
Is there anything else you want that we haven't covered that's important that you want to let us know?
I think the most important thing is that that it's not about prayer. It's about the container that is holding it. And so, you know, everybody who's going out on Saturday, and whether they're going to be down at Reliant or they're going to be with us or they might be at home, keep on praying, because it's a good thing. It's not going to do us any good to rail against a spiritual discipline, against something that is a holy and sacred act. So I would encourage people to keep on praying, but while they're doing that, to make sure that their hearts are open to the divine love that will come from that, the love that is for everybody, not just for a few.
Yeah, it's like, if you be careful what you pray for, you might get it.
Oh, it would be wonderful. That would be wonderful if we got it.
And you had mentioned that the American Family Association is on the Southern Poverty Law Center's list of hate groups.
Mm-hmm.
And that information has been thrown around a lot as people have discussed the response. But I think one of the things that's important to note is that it's actually very, very difficult to get on that list.
Okay.
The Southern Poverty Law Center does not put groups on that list just because they feel that homosexuality is unbiblical, or just because they oppose marriage equality or something of that nature. There has to be a sustained campaign of misinformation and repeated name calling for those organizations to stand
and
there.
And if
that's the Republican Party.
There are lines that I can't cross, but anyway. Yeah, and if you look at that list, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and you look at the churches that are on there for their, or other religious groups that are on there for their acts against the GLBT community, it's a really small list. And amongst those are Westboro Baptists and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's, I just, being aligned with somebody who's on that list doing a sacred act would just be a real difficult thing for me to do.
So clearly we have a full calendar of events this weekend. Remind me again when I need to be at First Unitarian?
2 p.m. Saturday the 6th, 5200 Fannin Street.
Fantastic.
All right. And we've been, your Reverend... I don't have the card.
We've been speaking with Reverend Adam Robinson, Assistant Minister at First Unitarian Universalist Church of Houston.
See, you got to learn this stuff. And this is Queer Voices.
The UN Human Rights Commissioner gives credit where it's due, and Ghana catches contagious homophobia later in the program. Elsewhere, equality was worth the wait and worth the fight for hundreds of New York's same-gender couples on July 24th. Salim Rizvi was among the wedding guests, bearing witness on behalf of Free Speech Radio News.
A festive atmosphere filled the streets outside the city clerk's office in downtown Manhattan on Sunday, where hundreds of same-sex couples waited for their turn to say, I do, while their families, friends, and supporters cheered the newlyweds. Inside the city clerk's office, couples were granted their marriage licenses, and with a waiver for the 24-hour waiting period, they were able to exchange vows moments later. One couple, Colleen and Leah Opinzato, took their vows in front of Judge Neil Ross.
As an institution born of love and devotion, marriage is the deliberate and lasting joining of desires, dreams, and aspirations between two people. Leah, do you take Colleen for your wife, and do you promise to be true to her in good times and in bad, in sickness and in health, to love her and honor her all the days of your life?
I do.
It is my true pleasure to present Leah and Colleen, equal partners, united in sacred matrimony. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Colleen Opinzato said she looks forward to married life together.
Everyone wants to find someone who, you know, they can grow old with, and that's just what we want too. And I think more and more people are coming to see that it's as simple as that.
Many same-sex couples waited for this day for years to legally exchange vows and receive the same rights and protections as heterosexual couples. One newly married couple, Damien Ross and Gary Casgrove, have been together for 15 years.
We just got married this afternoon a little while ago, and we just couldn't tell you how incredible it feels. You know, when you see people getting married on any day of the week, you're like, all right, congratulations, but until it's yours, you have no idea. There's no stronger thing than be able to declare that this is our family.
It's symbolic for us and our family. It's symbolic for the community.
More than 650 same-sex couples received marriage licenses in New York City, and 484 were married at city marriage bureaus on Sunday. Hundreds more are expected to follow, marking the beginning of a new social era in New York after Governor Andrew Cuomo signed the Marriage Equality Bill into law on June 24th. The new law now gives gay couples the same rights as heterosexual couples. David Munoz, who married his partner Jose Munoz on Sunday, said their lives will be easier now that they have legal protections.
Well, there's so many problems. You can look at taxation. You can look at insurance. You can look at health benefits. You can say if one of us gets ill, banking. We can't even open a bank account in which something happens to the other where the funds would go over. Inheritance taxes. There's so many things that we are limited by not being able to get married. Now we can be a part of that.
New York is one of six states in the United States to allow same-sex marriage. Newlyweds and their supporters say they'll continue the fight for equal rights, focusing now on the federal level and the repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act. Salim Rizvi, FSR in New York City.
The United Nations took another step in its long journey toward recognizing and defending the rights of LGBT people this week when its Economic and Social Council decided to restore the consultative status of the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans, and Intersex Association. In a new video message released this week, UN Human Rights Commissioner Navi Pillay traces the origins of the LGBT rights debate at the world body.
17 years ago, here at the United Nations headquarters in New York, a decision was made of historic proportions. The date was March 31st, 1994. A young Australian human rights activist called Nicholas Toonen had brought a case to the United Nations Human Rights Committee, which is responsible for interpreting and applying the International Treaty on Civil and Political Rights. Mr. Tunin alleged that his human rights were violated by the existence of a law in his home state of Tasmania that criminalized all sexual relationships between consenting adult men, including in private. The committee, after examining the arguments and counter-arguments, agreed with him. It decided that Australia was in breach of its international obligations under that treaty. The law in question, the committee found, violated Mr. Tunin's human rights. It subjected him to the threat of arrest, detention, and criminalization simply because he happened to be homosexual rather than heterosexual. And it also had a wider negative effect on society at large by reinforcing stigma and prejudice. The case, known as Tunin versus Australia, marked a watershed for wide-ranging implications for the human rights of millions of people. The Human Rights Committee had made clear that the right to be free from discrimination applies to everyone, gay, straight, lesbian, or bisexual. Sometimes history is made with great fanfare. Sometimes, as at the UN, it is made in ordinary meeting rooms before banks of stenographers and interpreters, recorded in official UN documents, translated into multiple languages. So it was in this case. But the result reverberated around the world. Nicholas Tunin had his complaint upheld. The Australian state of Tasmania removed the offending law from its statute books, and a signal was sent to all other countries that had similar laws. The Human Rights Committee has since reaffirmed its position in successive cases, entrenching in human rights law the principle that no country is entitled to discriminate against people on grounds of their sexuality. It is a principle that has since been endorsed by other UN human rights treaty bodies dealing with other areas of human rights law, such as torture, children's rights, economic, social, and cultural rights, and discrimination against women. Since 1994, more than 30 countries have taken steps to abolish the offense of homosexuality. Some have enacted new laws providing greater protection against discrimination on grounds of sexual orientation or gender identity. And in many parts of the world, we have witnessed a remarkable shift in public attitudes in favor of greater acceptance of gay and lesbian people. But criminal sanctions remain in place in more than 70 countries, exposing millions to the risk of arrest, imprisonment, even in some cases, the death penalty. Not because they have harmed anyone else or pose a threat to others, but simply for being who they are and for loving another human being. And of course, in many countries, homophobia remains rife, and lesbians, gays, bisexuals, and transgender persons continue to suffer targeted killings, beatings, torture, and rape. Last year, the United Nations Secretary General, Ban Ki-moon, launched an appeal for the worldwide decriminalization of homosexuality and for every country to ensure equal rights for all people, regardless of sexual orientation or gender identity. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, he said, is just that. It is universal. And it applies to us all, whoever we are, whatever we look like, whoever we share our lives with. No exceptions. This debate is unfolding in front of us. It goes to the heart of what we believe. It challenges us all to live up to the fundamental principle on which, in the end, all our human rights rest. The equal worth and the equal dignity dignity of all human beings. Thank you.
That was Human Rights Chief Navi Pillay with a special message on the history of the LGBT debate at the United Nations. Here on This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Last week, we reported that both the Christian Council of Ghana and the Coalition of Muslim Community of Ghana had held separate press conferences calling on the government to actively pursue and prosecute gays and lesbians. At least one official appears to have responded. Free Speech Radio news anchor Danny Wood learned more about the situation from researcher Charlotte Walker Saeed of the Human Rights Program at the University of Chicago.
What more can you tell us about this call from Ghana's Minister for the Western Region, Paul Evans Aidu, for the arrest of gays and lesbians?
It appears to come out of the blue, but it really isn't. There has been quite a long, at least the past few years, I would say the past 5 years, there has been increasing problems and increasing scapegoating of homosexuals in West Africa broadly, but also particularly in Ghana, with the rise of the politicization of a lot of religious groups, the increased political activity of many religious groups, and also sort of customary ethnic leadership councils who have really sought to make the quote-unquote the gay agenda sort of a kind of a demon that they can use politically to really scapegoat these actors, these, you know, homosexuals and homosexual human rights activists, to try and make them appear as if they are an affront to what is Ghanaian culture.
To what extent are those sorts of views held in the wider population?
I think the issue is a lot of politicians and religious leaders are capitalizing on many Ghanaian citizens' personal squeamishness about homosexuality and turning the moment into a political opportunity. And while homosexuality is obviously not widely accepted, I wouldn't say the everyday Ghanaian is most likely not about to vote for gay marriage, but I think the everyday Ghanaian has a form of personal squeamishness about homosexuality and may not hold the same kind of liberal values that a lot of sort of Western human rights activists also would hold, but I don't think that this kind of aggressivity, this literal manhunt that appears to be called for by political leaders, is really something that the majority of people would really advocate for. In most newspapers in Ghana, the Accra Daily Mail and the Ghana Chronicle, both which have written extensive op-eds really condemning homosexuals and claiming that it is abhorrent and ungodly, and more interestingly, they say it's un-Ghanaian, you know, that's really the cry, that the practice does not have any space within the Ghana cultural context. Even though they decry homosexual behavior, they say that really both of these newspapers say that this sort of manhunt is really undemocratic and does seem to go against Ghana's democratic rights.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the shared cultural contexts in Ghana specifically, but across Africa, that are, I guess, a fertile bed for this sort of prejudice against gays and lesbians?
I think that probably some pretty important aspects that are shared across West Africa is obviously the AIDS crisis. You know, obviously high rates of sexually transmitted disease, largely, you know, also AIDS, and also a very healthy and extremely influential religious culture, whether it is Protestant, Catholic, so largely Christian, or Muslim, and the highly influential and very influential religious culture does seem to affect both politics and sort of social life. And so these two elements of fear of AIDS, which is largely often fomented by religious leaders and political leaders, the AIDS crisis has brought about a kind of sort of focus on the family type of mentality where the AIDS crisis will be avoided, say many leaders, if we somehow return to our quote-unquote traditional family values. So AIDS crisis is really blamed on gays, prostitutes, largely women and cheating wives. A lot of times women are often scapegoated, prostitutes and sort of disloyal wives. And so this sort of campaigning against the vulnerable minorities, the people who don't have as many participatory elements of their citizenship, who aren't, you know, considered full citizens, like homosexuals or rural women, are often being scapegoated as part of the AIDS crisis.
In June, the UN passed a gay rights resolution. Would these sorts of insightful statements we're hearing from politicians in Ghana be illegal under international law, do you think?
I certainly think so. The rounding up and arrest of gays, as this particular regional minister seems to be calling for, rounding up and arresting gays, most people who work in human rights in Africa seem to be aware that once a gay man is arrested, he most likely will face torture, imprisonment without trial. So all of these things, which are already considered, you know, serious human rights violations, and so obviously illegal under international law. I don't think a lot of African politicians seem to be too concerned about international law, because a lot of them have specifically stated that human rights don't apply to homosexuals. And there is this fear about the including the Ghanaian homosexual as a full citizen, that would somehow be an affront to the democracy and to all citizens of Ghana if somehow they were to include these homosexuals as full citizens.
Charlotte Walker-Said, researcher in the Human Rights Program at the University of Chicago. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you so much, Danny. Thanks for having me.
In San Francisco, I'm Danny Wood.
Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, John Torres and Natalie Peoples contributed program material. Thanks also to Steve Pride and to Salim Rizvi, Danny Wood, and Free Speech Radio News. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and the generosity of our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to get involved. You can also find out how to hear the show on CD or podcasts, read news wrap, see what we look like, and check out our blog and our Facebook fan page. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email TWORadio@AOL.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening. I'm 2BBB Bellinger, New South Wales, KEOS College Station, Texas, CHMA Sackville, New Brunswick, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT. That was Paxton from the album of the same name, Which Way Do You Go? You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, Summer Iman, and Jack Valensky. For more information about tonight's program, including links to websites and organizations mentioned during the show, visit queervoices.org. And you can send email to jack@queervoices.org. Be sure to listen to KPFT every Sunday morning, starting at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston, a Pacifica Foundation station. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Listeners love KPFT and its programming. Pledge drives, not so much. So this summer, KPFT invites you to participate in a bold experiment and join the 10% of KPFT listeners who donate monthly to KPFT.
Visit KPFT.org today, click the Every Member Sustainer button, and do your part to increase that 10% of listener sustaining to 100%.
With greater sustainer support, KPFT can give you more of the great programming you love. Sustaining members make KPFT's future income predictable and steady, providing the fiscal stability KPFT needs to have fewer pledge drive days.
$5, $10, $15, or $20 a month from you makes all the difference. So visit KPFT.org, click the Every Member Sustainer button, and become a sustainer of KPFT quickly and securely online.
You'll also be able to make sure your online donation goes to the credit of your favorite show, and you can pick out a thank you gift too.
Every Member Sustainer, join the club now, KPFT.org. I'm Gloria Johnson.
And I'm Sam Gonzalez from the Sharpstown High School Broadcasting Program.
This is KPFT Houston.
I'm Sam Gonzalez from the Sharptown High School Broadcasting Program.
I'm Victoria Oluwole.
I'm Gloria Johnson.
I'm Darnell Anderson.
AFS is a worldwide nonprofit organization that has been leading international high school student exchange for more than 60 years.
Each year, AFS USA welcomes 2,500 international high school students who come to study in U.S. high schools and live with host families.
We are looking for families in the Houston area to become host families to students arriving in August.
To learn more about hosting for the 2011-2012 school year, visit afsusa.org/hostfamily.
This has been a public service announcement brought to you by the Broadcast Journalism Program at Sharptown High School.
This is KPFT Houston.